The subject of the morning is the past is prologue. Let us begin by praying silently for a moment. In Christ's name, amen. A woman was on the way to Washington, D.C., and her plane arrived late. She was understandably in a hurry, for she did not want to be late for an important appointment. She hastily made arrangements to get a cab, and about 40 minutes later, arrived at her destination. As she arrived and was getting out of the cab, she noticed an inscription on one of the great government buildings in Washington, and the inscription read, "The past is prologue." And as she was in the process of paying the cab driver, she repeated the inscription, "The past is prologue. I wonder what it means." And the cab driver, wanting to please, said, "Ma'am, I'm not sure what it means, but I think it means you ain't seen nothing yet." I must tell you that that is how I feel today. Here we are in the Civic Center celebrating 75 joyous years of service as a church. This is the largest gathering of our church at one time in one place ever. It is instructive to let the mind dwell on the two words, past and prologue. Webster defines past as a time before the present, a time gone by, history. He defines prologue as the preface or introduction to a literary work. The past is to make us aware of who we are, to remind us of the way we have come. But the past is prologue because it serves merely as an introduction of what is yet to be. It is beyond question that our celebration today prompts us to remember and give thanks for all God has done and is doing. But the objective of our celebration is to prepare us to move, to reach for what is yet to be. The past is, in fact, prologue. The morning lesson that Zita read describes a dramatic moment in the history of God's redemptive plan. The moment of deliverance is at hand for the children of Israel to leave Egypt. They have observed the Passover according to careful instructions. The people have moved out of Egypt and stand on the shores of the Red Sea. They are not really between a rock and a hard place, but they are between the sea and the onrushing chariots of Pharaoh's army. It's a story of God's deliverance of his people and the beginning of their journey to the land of promise. The arresting sentence in the morning lesson is the text of the morning. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Quit praying and get the people moving. Forward, march.'" Now, with this great story as our foundation, I want to build my thoughts today around three memorable words. And the first word, obviously, is remember. We are, you know, what we remember. Remembering is a form of visiting. Our roots ultimately define who and what we are. As the children of Egypt were taking, children of Israel were taking leave of Egypt, they were to do certain things. It was the institution of the Passover, commemorating their day of deliverance, and they were to remember the day of deliverance forever. And the instructions are clear, and I quote from the Bible, "This is a day to remember forever, for the Lord has brought you out with a mighty miracle. Mark this day of your exodus in the future. When your children ask you, 'What is this all about?' you shall tell them." So each spring, Jewish families, till this very day, gather for a celebration and a ceremony that is 3,000 years old, 10 times older than our observance of Thanksgiving. It is the Passover. We are here to remember. We are to remember all that God has done to bring us to this hour. Ralph Waldo Emerson observed that there is properly no history, only biography. What did he mean by that? He meant that it is people who believe something, who do something. And today it is people that we recall. Four pastors who preceded me in this pulpit. 28 associate pastors who labored and ministered among us. And then the essential element, all of the people. People who had the courage to begin. People who had the courage that when they faced adversity, they continued. People who had the vision and the foresight to relocate the church so that it could claim its promise. It is the story of people. Ordinary people like you, ordinary people like me. It was a physicist who said that the flap of a butterfly's wing changes the weather hundreds of miles away. What did he mean by that? He meant that each of our actions count for something. I am confident that those who founded our church did not fully know where the road was leading, but God did. God took their faith, their courage, their sacrifice, blessed it, burnished it, enlarged it, all for His glory. The world has not changed all that much since those who gave birth to this church launched it. Oh, I know that the city is larger. The population of the world has doubled. But the human condition has not changed all that much. They live as we live in a world of contradiction, some chaos, some joy. We're always between doubt and faith, between wonder and cynicism. It is in the struggle that we find out who we are and what we shall be. But from the beginning, there were those with tenacity who declared that we shall, in fact, be men and women of faith. We shall teach that faith to our children, and they will teach it to their children, so that our children's children shall know from whence we came and shall speak of this church and our beginnings with great joy. In the play The Man of La Mancha, Don Quixote said to anyone who would listen to him, "I just wanted to add a measure of grace to the world." This church and its people for 75 years have been adding a measure of grace to the world. Grace as it is proclaimed and lived out in the life and work and teachings of Jesus Christ. And I must say in tribute that this church has never succumbed to the temptation to stand still or to look back, nor will it ever, God willing. Joyce Carol Oates once noted, and I quote, that nostalgia was the vice of a people fascinated with the past because they were afraid of the future. We have never been interested merely in saving yesterday just for today. It is a day for remembering, but secondly, it is a day for renewal. We remember for a purpose. In the lesson of the morning, the writer tells the people of Israel that when they remember that they will be branded as God's own unique people. Remembering not only passes the torch from one generation to another, but renews our trust in who we are. We're God's own people. This church that we have loved has faced and overcome many challenges in a 75-year journey. The way was not always easy, but we kept going because we are charged with a mission that makes us different and makes a difference. We are God's own people. William Cowper, the 18th century poet, struggled for most of his life with loneliness and sometimes depression. In spite of his struggle, and some might even say because of his troubles, he grew close to God. And one of his legacies to you and me are the words of one of the great hymns that he wrote, "Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds you so much dread are big with mercy, and they shall break in blessings on your heads." We do remember who we are, and fresh courage take. We're God's own people, and remembering that reality will give us renewal. and new hope. George MacLeod, former moderator of the Church of Scotland, tells the story of an encampment of soldiers in England. World War II was over. The soldiers were waiting to be mustered out and were waiting to be sent home. There was an air of restlessness and boredom in the encampment. To distract the men, various forms of entertainment were arranged. A boxing match had been arranged. There were several matches, and between one of the bouts, a doctor helped a soldier into the ring. The soldier was an amnesia victim, and he stood with his doctor in the center of the ring. The doctor explained to the crowd his condition, and the amnesia victims turned so that all could get a close look at him. Husky, clean-featured, a fine-looking young man. And in the hush that fell over the throng that day, he spoke, the man with amnesia, to the soldiers. "Isn't there anyone here who can call me by my name? Isn't there someone here who can tell me just who I am? It's easy to forget who we are. We're God's own people. We can forget because all of us are tugged at by the yesterdays that are gone and distracted by the tomorrows that are yet to be. And often we fail to capture the present moment and its promise. It is in the present of laughter and tears where ugliness and beauty and happiness and horror can walk arm in arm. It is there that life is lived, won or lost, and we cannot make our journey through it without renewal, without recalling who we are, God's own people. This is why we have the church whose founder is Jesus Christ. He came to empower us by his presence to be all that God would have us to be. If we will let him, he will in fact come into your heart and mind. Sometimes we cannot fully even identify the reality of Christ's presence, but we know he's there, for our eyes are suddenly wet with tears as beauty unexpectedly dominates our vision. There is a hunger that wells up within us when truth wants to dominate our minds, and there is an inner intuition that makes us want to march and to live in new ways. H.G. Wells used to swear about all of those inner urgings in his own life. He said, "This idiotic feeling I have in the dark that someone keeps trying to get in touch with me." Or perhaps you would prefer Thomas Wolfe, who said, "Someone who speaks my name in the night and I listen." Or Thomas Hardy, with all of his anger and his agnosticism, he could not escape or explain away the feeling that there is a power in life that personally cares about me. Or perhaps you would like what a tribal chieftain said to a missionary in a primitive place. We've often known that after sunset, someone brushes by us as he walks among the trees, but we have not known enough to speak of him. In the Far East, an Oriental friend told a missionary teacher, "Oh, I've known him. I've known the one that you speak about all my life. I've just never known his name before." Listen, we know his name, and he calls you and me by name. We are God's own people. We are his church, empowered, renewed to tell the story of Jesus and his love. On this day of celebration, we are remembering so that we can be renewed. But it's also a day for us to reach. There comes a time, you know, to act, a time to move and to reach, and that time is now. The moment had come there on the shore of the Red Sea. The text of the morning challenges us. The Lord said to Moses, "Quit praying and get the people moving. Forward march." 75 years have prepared us to embrace our present challenges with eagerness, to reach for our future, and to do so with joy. The late Bishop Gerald Kennedy ended his autobiography by saying that we really just have two stances before God. One is on our knees saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. The other is on our feet saying, here am I, Lord, send me. As we reach, we remember that we are a forgiving people, a forgiven people. The church is that community of love and caring where broken things are mended, where new starts are encouraged, where hope is found by those who have no hope, where shattered dreams are forgotten in newfound joys. Dame Edith Sitwell said of William Blake, the great painter, of course he was cracked. That's where the light shone through. We all have our cracks, but they have been healed by the light of God's goodness and grace. We are forgiven. One of the most vivid moments of forgiveness in our history that I can remember was played out at the time of the death of the Vice President, Hubert Humphrey. Hundreds of people gathered in Washington for the memorial service. One person was there who was ignored and shunned by the crowd. He was just standing isolated and alone. His name, Richard Nixon. The memorial service for Mr. Humphrey was the first time he had been to Washington since resigning the presidency. It was then that a very special thing happened. President Carter came into the room, and before he was seated, he saw former President Nixon standing over by the wall. He went over to him and smiling broadly and, as a surprise to everybody, said, "Welcome home, Mr. President. Welcome back home again." The church is the community of the forgiven. The church is sometimes the community of the fearful. The church and its people know what it should be and what it should do, but we are fearful. Fear, candidly, plays havoc with our lives. Resurrected people are not supposed to live in fear, but in faith. We are in need of the most comprehensive building program in our history as I speak to you today. It is not only necessary, it is crucial if we are continue to be the church that God has called us to be. It has taken 75 years to come to the threshold of this community, and we need not be fearful, for God will equip us to face every challenge and to make whatever the sacrifices that are to be made to meet the challenges. On this Super Sunday, it's good to remember that the legendary Newt Rockne. Newt Rockne knew how to psych out his opponents by making them feel inadequate and afraid. One day Notre Dame was facing a very crucial game against a vastly superior University of Southern California team. Freudian slip. Knowing that he was facing a stronger team, Coach Rockne recruited every brawny student he could find on the Notre Dame campus and suited up about 100 of those hulks in uniform. On the day of the game, the USC team ran out on the field first and awaited the coming of the Fighting Irish. Finally, out of the locker room came an army of green giants. It kept on coming and coming and coming until they surrounded the field. The USC team panicked. Their coach reminded them that Rockne could play only 11 at a time, but the damage was done. USC lost. They did not lose to 100 men, but instead they were beaten by their own fears of inadequacy. We shall not claim our future on the horn of hesitation, but on the reaching for God's dreams. He has not given us His grace and goodness to live in fear. It is not worthy of us as Christians to be immobilized with fear. Don't you remember how He said it? Be not anxious. I am with you always. We are a forgiven people. We are not to be immobilized by fear. We are to reach in faith. You can miss it if you were not reading with care in the lesson of the morning, Verse 13 of chapter 14, don't be afraid. Just stand where you are and watch, and you will see the wonderful way the Lord will rescue you today. The actual rendering of the text is stand still. And friends, it's not easy to stand still when the sea is before you and an onrushing army of chariots behind you. In that situation, your feet just has a need to move. But the command is stand still. Stand still and trust what God is going to do for you. A moment of stillness gives us a perspective that is helpful. It is a time to reflect upon all that God has done for us and with us. It is a moment of preparation and meditation to prepare us for that which is before us. They stood still. And they stood still that day before Pharaoh's army because they believed that God was about to do something magnificent. And guess what? He did. H.G. Wells gives us something to think about when he said of Jesus of Nazareth, "This Galilean is too big for our small hearts." He's right. It all comes down to whether or not we believe that Christ is bigger than our fears. The churches that make it, the churches that matter, the churches whose manner of life is productive, come ultimately to believe and practice that faith in Christ is bigger than the challenges that ever confront them. We are today a forgiven people. We are a people whose faith is larger than our fears. What now? Forward. Forward. The text of the morning is graphic. Quit praying. Get the people moving. Forward march. This is not a put down for prayer. There simply comes a time to act. You may remember a song that was sung by the soldiers and sailors of World War II. Praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. Our faith calls us beyond intention to action, beyond prayer to work. Study the life of Jesus. You will note that his prayer times were often times of great struggle and agony. But when he rose from saying his prayers, he acted. About this time of year, I reread all of the accounts of the resurrection and the resurrection appearances in the four Gospels. It is the beginning of my own final preparation for the season of Lent and the celebration of Easter. It is always meaningful for me because after years of study, reading the stories again of the victory of Jesus Christ over and over, I still discover things that I've never noticed before. Some days ago, I was reading the accounts of the resurrection in the Gospel of John. John, in chapter 20, begins early in the morning. And then he adds this phrase, "It was still dark." Look around you in this city of ours, in some of our own hearts, in some of our own lives. It is still dark. Christ is risen, but many do not know him, and some have not responded to him. That is why the work of this church is still forward. We still have work to do, and we must seize the opportunity that is before us. As Ann Weems reminds us, it's not easy to keep going. If the trail before us is dark, don't give up. Keep going. If the hill is steep and the road is long, don't sit. Keep moving. And then she writes, "Up and up the stairs of time, the pilgrims climb no matter what. One more time, always one more time, always and forever." The direction is forward. The work we do as a church is never done. And there is something energizing about it all. So here we are, all of the family together in one place, a reunion of sorts. We are proud of all that we've been and all that we are. And when the reunion is over, we go back to the ordinary. And therein is your challenge and mine. What now? What now? I say forward. Reunions are in vain if they do not renew and prepare us for tomorrow. As Annie sings in the Broadway musical, the sun will come out tomorrow. What now? I call today for a new spirit, and I do not possess the eloquence of mind or tongue to fully capture what I feel in my heart. More than 50 years have slipped by since that moment when I dedicated my own life to Christ and made my profession of faith. These years have been crowded with God's goodness and His grace. I am among the fortunate who was shaped in a loving Christian family and who now lives in a loving Christian family. I was nourished in faith in the Presbyterian Church, the ninth generation of my family to do so. I was educated in the institutions of the church, ordained to the ministry 34 years ago this year. And the church has entrusted me with challenges and responsibilities and granted me many privileges and bestowed upon me many honors little deserved. No privilege, no honor greater than the privilege of serving as your pastor for 24 years now. And the question before me and before you is, what now? Jacques Ellul has declared, man has set out at a tremendous pace to go nowhere. Surely our journey of 75 years and 24 years together is not a journey that leads us to anything that is so indistinct, so hesitating, so lacking in direction as that. But the question persists, what now? Forward. The direction is forward. With careful plans to mark our way, we shall go forward with a focus on people. Even as I speak, two houses are taking shape where we are building with Habitat for Humanity. We will build 10 this year for people. All kinds of people will be our focus, the least and the lowest. And you will find the least and the lowest among the down and out and among the up and in. Human need knows no social distinction. Human need examines no financial statement. Bishop Arthur Moore, the beloved Bishop of Georgia Methodism for many years, said, "A church that neglects the masses will never dominate the tomorrows." What now? What now? The direction is forward with a focus on people, but also with a dependency on the faithfulness of people. This has been the foundation of a journey of 75 years. Our foundation is in men and women whose lives are centered on Jesus Christ. Our future will be defined by the tears and toils of those persons who see the world through the eyes of Jesus Christ. W.H. Auden, corresponding with his godson, Philip Spender, composed what Auden called Epistle to a Godson. Auden was contemplating the future, which is always uncertain. So he wrote, "In yestertimes it was different. The old could still be helpful when they could nicely envisage the future as a named and settled landscape their children could make the same sense of as they did, laughing and weeping at the same stories." I suspect Auden's futility came because there was no such future. There is no such future where we can count on a named and settled landscape where the stories are the same. Nothing is ever the same. Time does not stand still, and the passing of time guarantees change. The church endures because and only because our confidence rests solely in the glorious truth that the tomb is empty, and in an enduring hope that your heads and hearts and mine are not. What now? What now? The direction is forward. A focus on people with the awareness of that our capacity will be rooted in the faithfulness of people who become something great because they believe in someone who is great. And the foundation of it all is our faith in God. Gordon MacDonald, a Boston minister, and a widely read author, tells a tender story of visiting with his grandfather, Thomas MacDonald. It was to be their last visit. His grandfather, an engineer by training, a Christian by choice, was gentle and quiet-spoken. He read his Bible and said his prayers and was now in his nursing home. His earliest memory of his grandfather was of seeing him one day in his office sitting in a large chair with his Bible in his lap and was saying his prayers. He challenged his grandson early in life by saying to him, "If God ever permits you to be a preacher, come and do your preaching in the Northeast. That's where you'll be needed the most." As he quietly sat by his grandfather's bed in the nursing home, many memories of home and his grandfather ran through Gordon MacDonald's mind. The old gentleman no longer had any memory for anything. He did not even know his grandson's name. But the gentle, noble spirit was still there. And it was there on that last day when Gordon went to see him for the last time. "Grandfather, this is Gordon," feeling foolish that he had to introduce himself. "Who are you?" said the old man. "I'm Gordon, your son Donald's son." It made no difference. Grandfather did not remember. So Gordon simply told him what he had come to say. "Grandfather, I want you to know that I did get back to the Northeast. I'm the pastor now of a wonderful congregation in Boston. I preach the Bible to them every week. Your prayers for me have been answered." "Oh, that's good," said the old man, still not sure who Gordon was. When it came time to leave, Gordon said, "Grandfather, I'm going to pray for you." The old man was delighted. Gordon began to pray for his grandfather's health, for God to be present with him, for him to be able to remember that he was loved by his family. When he looked up and prepared to say goodbye after he had finished his prayer, it was clear that the grandfather had no intention of saying goodbye, for it was his time to pray. And pray he did. Suddenly, from a mind that was foggy with age and disease, words of intercession poured from his grandfather's lips. The old man, with the weight of his physical frailty, oblivious to the world beyond the door, unable even to remember his grandfather's name, but he still knew one thing and knew it well. He knew God and knew how to talk with God. And Gordon listened as he prayed. He spoke of God's great promises in the Bible. He challenged God to show mercy on a broken world. He expressed his personal thanksgiving for the love of Jesus Christ. And then he said, "And now, O God, I pray for..." And he said, "Son, what's your name?" "Gordon," he said. "Yes, thank you. I pray for Gordon that you would bring upon him a heavy anointing of the prophet's power when he preaches the gospel. And, O God, would you give..." "And what's your name again, son?" "Gordon." "Yes, Gordon. Give Gordon a double measure of blessing as he..." And the prayer for Gordon went on and on. 5 minutes more and many reminders of his name. Gordon MacDonald came away from the visit deeply moved by one cardinal matter. His grandfather knew nothing. His mind was gone, but he still knew the one thing that matters. He knew God. He was now living out of his soul, and there was no senility in that dimension of his life, only beauty and power and peace. It is our objective in the next 75 years, above all else, as a church and as a people, to know God. To know him personally. It is that knowledge, that relationship, that is the foundation of everything. A formal, faint-hearted, self-indulgent, dress parade Christianity will not attract, impress or even influence our time. We must have and practice a faith stout enough to love iniquity into devotion, loving enough to unite men and women in common service, concerned enough to seek and to find the lost among us. The business of this church, as the 21st century approaches, is to help men and women to know God. If we are to accomplish that mission, ours must be an unquenchable faith in the gospel we profess to believe. And when that happens, this church will be that place where those who march with and for God will find a place to rally. Jamie, his mother wrote to me, is age 7 and a member with his mother of this church. On Christmas Eve, Jamie invited some friends to accompany him to the birthday party for Jesus at 3 o'clock. Jamie was pointing out the church's many good points to his little friend. The beautiful decorations, the sanctuary, the music, the great organ. As the service began, Jamie, feeling proud of his church, leaned over and said, "Mom, I really like this church. Let's keep coming here until it goes out of business." At that point, his mother said, I assured him that having been around for 75 years, that it would continue to be there for us for a long time yet to come. Jamie, where are you today? Jamie, I make as your pastor this solemn vow before God, and this people makes a solemn vow before God, Jamie, that we will keep this church strong, and we will pass it on to you so that you can keep it strong when your time comes to stand in this place. Thanks be to God.